This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Say yes to Pure Leaf Tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf Tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
With us every Monday and Friday, covering the team on our behalf, is Ben Standing from The Athletic. He's got his own podcast, Last Man Standing, and you can follow him on X on Twitter, at Ben Standing. Before we get to catching up with everything that's happened since we talked on Friday, what do you think the signing of both Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins means in Cincinnati as it relates to Trey Hendrickson?
I mean, if I had to pick a side, I'd probably lean towards it's a step towards re-signing Trey Hendrickson, that now that those deals are done, they can, you know, play with the salary cap as needed to figure out a way to get it all done. I mean, I guess it's just like, teams always, you know, teams have decisions, you know, who you're going to keep, how much money you want to spend, whatever. But the fact that, you know, Joe Burrow kind of pressed ownership into getting the T. Higgins part of this done along with Chase is one thing. I think that really did lead to this getting done because, you know, I don't know that the T. Higgins is on that team otherwise still just because it's a lot of money at one spot. But, just scoring is not enough. You got to be able to stop the ball. We saw last year how they couldn't. So I just don't see how you're planning to try to win, spending all that money at receiver and court, you know, plus Joe Burrow's contract, and then giving up your best defensive player, even if they got back a fair compensation in draft picks. Like, that's not helping them now. So if I had to guess, I'd guess they'd find a way to get it done. But, you know, we'll see. The Bengals are, you know, notoriously, you know, a cheaper organization to say. And, you know, that's a lot of money on to spend on Hendrickson plus those guys. So maybe not, but if I had to guess, I would guess they figure out a way to get it done.
All right, we'll come back to, you know, edge, pass rusher, and if Hendrickson were to stay in Cincinnati, where does Washington turn? Just if you can do this, since we spoke on Friday, there was activity over the weekend with players being re-signed and one player leaving. If you can just catch everybody up to speed as to where we are on roster adds and roster losses.
Defensive end was there was activity there. The defensive line, Cleveland Farrell, Jalen Holmes staying, you know, two guys that were, you know, just part of the depth last year. I thought Holmes did some good work playing inside and outside. Farrell started, you know, what, two sacks in the first two games, and then it just kind of, that was the highlight, clearly nagging injuries. He never got too far after that, but just more depth at that spot to help that room potentially. Dante Fowler, meanwhile, leaves, goes to signs with Dallas. You know, it's on the surface. We've talked about this, like, seems weird. You wouldn't want to bring back a guy who got, you know, 10 and a half sacks last year, was very productive in that regard. But, you know, his issues against the run, or he just at least wasn't a particularly strong run defender, I think really showed up in the NFC Championship game. You know, he was involved in that very first Saquon Barkley play where Barkley goes 60 yards or so all the way for a score, and then Fowler ends up playing less than 30% of the snaps, which was the season low for him. So it seemed apparent that Washington was, maybe they're willing to bring him back for not much. He did what was his tweet the other day before free agency started, basically that he was getting tired of being disrespected.
Yeah.
Felt very much like, might be talking about Washington. It sounds like a loss, and I'm not saying it's not, but I think Washington's plan overall here is, okay, they got to start getting better. It's not just enough to have decent players. They got to fix certain spots, and clearly they've made some moves, including like signing Javon Kinlaw to address that. Then on the other side, I think that the Nate Herbig signing was this weekend,
that happened,
right?
Over the weekend. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so basically, a guy who's a veteran guard. He started in this league. He's played center as well. Injuries kept him sidelined last year. But look, they obviously, as we know, with Sam Cosmi likely to miss at least some games to start the season because of his ACL surgery, they need some more bodies there. We've already speculated that Andrew Wiley, particularly, after the Laremy Tunsil trade, could end up being that guy. He played guard in Kansas City, and if Brandon Coleman's at right tackle, then maybe Wiley slides in, and maybe he still does, but now they have another guy who could do it more, who's played the position more recently. So you would think on some level, Herbig is part of the replace Cosmi competition, and Wiley's sort of there with him, but maybe he's also there in case Brandon Coleman, for whatever the reason, isn't a smooth fit at right tackle. He could go in there. So, I think, more depth, they needed to get some different bodies for their backup offensive linemen. And now they have a guy who's, had some success, has started, and maybe at this point, maybe the front runner to be that Cosmi replacement.
His brother, Nick Herbig, who was playing linebacker and playing really well for the Steelers last year early in the season, he was like considered to be a big injury miss and loss in their game against Washington, and then came back, I think, maybe after the Washington game and played pretty well. So back to, let's just focus on the defense today. Because the bottom line is, they've kept a lot of their own. They've added a few from outside, Kinlaw and Goldman and Wise and Jones and Harris. But at this point, how much better on paper do you think the defense is, if at all?
Well, I think it's if it's better, and it would be in sort of incremental ways that maybe not show as obviously until we see them on the field together, right? I mean, look, clearly the run defense was a huge problem last year, right? We already know that. The secondary, the pass coverage issues, let's just say Marshon Lattimore improves, that would go a long way towards helping there. But the run defense, they just gave up tons of yards, as we know, on the edge before contact. And, Saquon Barkley exploited them in every single game they played. But there isn't like one signing where you're like, oh, wow, okay, that's definitely going to fix that. I mean, Javon Kinlaw would be sort of the most obvious one to point to in that regard. But, if he's playing defensive tackle, they already have Payne and Johnny Newton. So what are we talking about here as a guy coming off the bench? Okay, that's important, but that's not like the fix. Now, he maybe is going to end up playing more on that edge,
right,
perhaps in rundowns, and maybe they think that's the fix. But, I think we've all sort of questioned that signing, at least in terms of the money, the contract terms. We'll see about the fit. I've never, I don't think he was previously viewed as like a Dave Butts run stopping type. But okay, I guess I understand what they're thinking with his big body. A guy like a Dietrich Wise, he's a guy that can get sacks. He's not probably going to do what say Fowler did last year, but he's also more likely to be a better all-around defensive lineman, right? So I think it's things like that where it's like nothing is like, wow, that move definitely right there fixes the problem or helps them address it. It's more subtle in that regard. And, I think that's where it's hard to say that they've improved, like, wow, look at this group. But let me see them on the field in Joe Witt Jr.'s system, how they plan to use these guys, and then I would feel a bit better, particularly up front. So, I think against the run, at least, I think that to me is how I would see it. And then hopefully, obviously, there's a trickle-down effect if they're more stable up front, and that helps Bobby Wagner, that helps the strong safety, et cetera, do what they do. But like I said, it's more of an incremental thing. And for me, at least, I'm going to have to see what that looks like on the field before I say, oh, okay, cool, they definitely have upgraded.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any clue, and I think most listening don't either, as to whether or not how they feel. And Trey Hendrickson, if they were to have gotten him, or if Myles Garrett actually had been available, who knows, and we'd have a totally different view. But they may feel just year two in the system is a big deal. But when you look at it from our standpoint, from our position, they've essentially added only one player that you can pencil in as a starter. I mean, they're bringing back Bobby Wagner. That's a big deal. I'm not minimizing it. It's a one-year deal, but it's a big deal that they're bringing him back. But I think Will Harris is the only player that they have signed defensively that you would say, well, he's probably going to be a starting safety next to Quan Martin. I mean, Kinlaw is going to be a part of a rotation. Jonathan Jones may be a part of a rotation. He might be a starter, but that's basically it. And what most of us had agreed on when the season ended, this was the side of the ball they needed to improve on.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember, I can't remember who I was talking to, but on my podcast at one point, I think it was my buddy Dalton Ross, who's a Commanders fan. He writes for Entertainment Weekly. He was saying, it's funny, we talk about this defense, and we say individually, we look at the different players, and boy, Wagner had a good year. I mean, maybe you and I talked about this too. This guy had a good year, et cetera. But then in totality, you're like, wait a minute, they get run over all the time. What do we make of it? Then of course, Lattimore's issues, as highlighted in the two playoff in the games against Tampa and Philly. What's going on there? So it's tricky in that regard, and that's, I think you're right. I mean, look, even with the Will Harris thing, is that an upgrade over Jeremy Chinn? I mean, Jeremy Chinn was pretty good as the season went along. And, if you just look in terms of the contracts, doesn't mean this is how it'll play out, but Jeremy Chinn's deal was more notable than Will Harris's deal. So that suggests that the marketplace wanted Jeremy Chinn more than Will Harris. So, it's hard to say that, like, on paper, that this has been an improvement. Now, obviously, I think, like a thing like Johnny Newton playing, right? Obviously, his whole offseason last year was messed up because of having foot surgery on both feet. So does Johnny Newton come in this year with a full offseason, and does he look like a transformed player? Maybe. That's what we're talking about, right? Can they get a player or two on defense to shift things around? Maybe they're banking on that happening. But, again, to be fair, he's replacing Jonathan Allen, who, I'm not saying Jonathan Allen was the best defensive player last year, but obviously he's been very good for this team for his career. So, we're saying Newton's going to be bigger impact than a guy that was a two-time Pro Bowler, particularly, Allen was on the field the first five-plus weeks before the injury. So, yeah, it's confusing. Now, again, obviously we haven't gotten to the draft, and maybe that's where they bank on getting more impact. But, yeah, I mean, it feels like they're bringing the band back together, and the band was off key for a good chunk of their performances last year. So it is confusing, and yet it's like, well, I kind of get the guys they brought back, but yeah, it's a little confusing. And by the way, like the defensive line, you could look at it right now. They've got 11 guys who you could say would make this team. Like, it's not like, I mean, they're all solid, but is that enough to improve them? And that is the real question.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if it doesn't change personnel-wise significantly between now and opening day, I think most people, and I would put myself into that group, would say biggest concerns stopping the run. Defense again. To your point, we talked about it all season long. They've got good players. There's like a disconnect with their inability to get teams off the field, their inability to stop the run. And Frankie Louvu and Bobby Wagner and Daron Payne and John Allen and Johnny Newton and Dorrance Armstrong and Quan Martin and Jeremy Chinn. But for whatever reason, it didn't work. And maybe they view the players in a similar way. And maybe it's the scheme, or maybe it's just year two. They're expecting a big jump. Defense is very variable, you know, year to year in terms of performance. So perhaps they're more confident in, you know, it's not stopped them from thinking about people like Myles Garrett and Trey Hendrickson. But in terms of the players they brought back, you know, a lot of those one-year deals, the Sheldon Days and the Jalen Holmeses and the, you know, and what they believe that maybe they'll make a big jump and it'll be different. Defense often changes year to year a lot. Maybe they're due to be better on defense next year. Maybe that's the strategy.
I mean, we saw that in the Rivera era. There were years where that group was, you know, ranked top 10.
22. 22, they were number 9 in the NFL in DVOA defense. They were an excellent defense. That's why they were in the mix for a playoff spot late in the year.
Right, for sure. And I think, like, you know, to compare those two teams, I think, you know, Daron Payne, I think so much of this to me, you know, we don't talk about him a lot because, you know, of the two defensive tackles, he was always the quieter one. You know, when they had the four defensive linemen together, he was always the one who was like, you know, okay, he's more run stopper than pass rusher. That's far less sexy, whatever. But like, he's got to improve. I mean, like, they have not gotten nearly enough out of him. Obviously, I'm talking organizationally. Peters and Quinn didn't sign him, but you know, they haven't gotten enough out of him since the extension. If he's able to get back to that 2022 form when he, you know, blew up with his sack total and was just a defensive presence, that can shift everything. Like, you know, the Laremy Tunsil signing, it's not just that he's able to potentially, you know, give Jaden Daniels a tremendous blindside pass protector. It shifts the entire line of in the offense as to what they can do, because they can, you know, they don't have to send help to him, and it's going to make everything else, you know, a little bit easier for the other guys. Well, the same thing would happen here. If Daron Payne went back to that form, something, you know, I'm not saying he has to get 11 sacks again, but, you know, be much more of a disruptor than we've noticed the last couple of years, that by itself could change a lot. But it's to the fact that we don't even discuss it. You and I just had this conversation, and we're not going, well, Daron Payne, you know, why not? Well, that's the problem. He needs to – they need him to get back to something, to the form where he really is considered one of the premier disruptors in the league up the middle. But we haven't seen that, so we're almost like kind of moving on like it's not going to happen. So that may be the biggest thing they can hope for.
You know, that and the emergence of Johnny Newton as a more consistent force in year two with, as you said, a healthy offseason, which he did not have coming into his rookie year. But, you know, for those of you that I get it. You know, he had his best season in a contract year. He's 27 years old. These are his prime years. He's not past his prime. John came into the league a little bit older than Daron. Daron's 27 years old. He is capable athletically of being a very high-level interior defensive tackle. And you're right. He's got to step up, and he's got to be a more consistent player week in and week out, even though I would suggest that's not necessarily where they had their problems against the run. They had those issues more, you know, outside the tackle than they did inside the tackles, which is one of the reasons they moved him at one point to try to play the edge a little bit. But yeah, getting Daron Payne and Johnny Newton, and then hopefully what they're expecting out of Kinlaw could be huge for them defensively. I was just looking before the show started just at various things, and obviously over the last week, the additions from their own free agent pool have been significant. But they haven't – they chose not – well, I think they liked him and wanted him, but Zacchaeus moved on. I'm thinking Crowder's a possibility now for this reason. Tell me what you're thinking. And I know you don't have to have an answer to this today. I mean, that answer could come in the draft. That answer could come off last year's, you know, some of the guys that they may have signed to undrafted free agent contracts a year ago, whatever. But they don't have a punt returner on their roster. Crowder was their punt returner. Is Crowder still a possibility, do you think?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you know, he's the kind of guy, like my thought going before free agency started was, he's the pull in case of emergency guy should De'Ami Brown, Zaccheaus, Noah Brown, like should that trio not return or only one of them as the case, it was Noah Brown, and he's the one that, you know, you definitely wouldn't put in that a returner type role. So, yeah, I mean, I just don't think he's going to be like, you know, I don't think other teams are probably clamoring to say, hey, we got to bring in Jamison Crowder. He'll probably be there, if I had to guess, post-draft if needed. But, yeah, I mean, look, he's obviously, you know, we're not talking about the flashiest of guys, but always, I never think to myself, boy, get this guy off the field, whether it's a receiver. And look, he was better at returner this time than he was the first time he was here, where the fumbles seemed to be problematic. He was cleaner last year. Zaccheaus was probably the one who had more issues in that regard than Crowder. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a possibility. And, you know, that's one spot right now where, like I said before, like they've got 11 defensive linemen. If they do nothing else, they can field a rotation of guys who, you know, played last year in the league. They only have, in my view, like four receivers right now. I mean, I know K.J. Osborne's around, and he's been a productive guy in this league, but based on what we saw here last year, plus his time with New England last year, you know, didn't
look too much. Luke Debo, Terry, and Noah Brown.
Right. So there's at least two spots open based on, like, just keeping six. They had seven at times last year. So, yeah, I think Crowder makes a lot of sense, but my guess is that they feel like, you know, they have a sense of his market, what he is or what he isn't, and that they can go back to that at some point. So, yeah, I wouldn't be stunned at all if Crowder's back.
So when you get around to whatever next mock, I don't even know what version it'll be of the draft. Now, if Trey Hendrickson ends up remaining in Cincinnati, is it even money or slightly longer odds that Washington takes a defensive end / edge at 29?
Yeah, I talked about this on my latest podcast episode, which should be up at some point today, in that, okay, so you look now at the board, like in terms of their needs, if we're going that route, yes, I mean, they need to get some sort of young upside presence at defensive end kind of regardless, right? I mean, Trey Henderson's an immediate impact, but he's 31. They don't have anybody on the perimeter that you feel like is going to be here for a few years and has some potential. So there's that. I think cornerback is the other spot where, look, Jonathan Jones is a one-year deal. We'll see where Lattimore is at. If he doesn't respond, he may not be here in 26. So, and they still just need pure depth there. So that's another one. And then like that general offensive playmaker, whether it's receiver, running back, speed, like those are the three spots to me that still kind of stand out. But defensive end is the most immediate impact. So the answer to your question is yes. Now, this is the part where it's obviously a bit subjective. You look at the board, you try to play this out, starting with Abdul Carter, who might be going off the board number one or number two in the draft, go down from there. I think there's like five or six edge rush types who could go, and it kind of feels like they all might go before pick 29. And then when you look at the options, sort of the next tier after that, like if you're basing it off of mock drafts and rankings, I don't know that there's like an obvious name there. I've talked before about a guy like Nick Skaraton from Texas A&M who, when he was at Purdue as a sophomore, he led the Big Ten in sacks last year. He bulked up with A&M and his numbers fell off a bit, but still considered to be a productive player. He's now slimmed down from like 280 into like the 250s. But I don't see too many mock drafts saying, hey, he's a guy going late first, you know, somewhere in the second, but not necessarily late first. So that becomes now the need versus best player available type deal. So I think that's the question for me at the moment, is just what's there. But if you said without knowing the board, yes, I would say defensive end's got to be somewhere close, like you said, like even money. I know Adam Peters would never say, hey, we're going into this, we have to get position X, And again, that's why you get 11 defensive linemen and a bunch of ends, so you don't have to feel like you have to do anything. But they need to be more explosive at that spot. So, yes, to me, that would be the odds-on favorite. And then, again, it just comes down to, like the Johnny Newton situation last year, do they think the best player at some position that they maybe need some help at is that, or, you know, is a cornerback slash offensive playmaker the, you know, the best player available at that time?
I think the interesting thing, too, about this draft, as I'm starting to pay attention to it a little bit more, is edge, it's deep, and interior D lineman, it's deep. And there are going to be a bunch of both that go in the first round. And I know they took Johnny Newton last year in the second round, and that their biggest money spend on defense and free agency was Javon Kinlaw. But we've already seen Adam Peters will go best available. He did it with Newton last year. And it's possible that in terms of D linemen, an interior D lineman may be the best player on the board when they pick at 29. So, yeah, all those things are going to be interesting to watch. All right, what else? What did you think of the tournament bracket?
It's so fun watching everybody get upset about the bracket. You know, every year it's the exact same story. It's just a different specific team topic, but it's always hilarious that that's the case. I mean, you know, you're the Maryland insider here, so I'm definitely curious what you think, but it sounds like, wait, am I right? Is Grand Canyon like an online university, or what's the deal with them?
They can't be an online university. It's in Phoenix. It looks like a commuter school of some sort, right?
Well, I mean, it's not like a normal college, right? Isn't that the deal? Like,
University of Phoenix is online, because I've seen their ads. Right? They used to do commercials all the time on TV.
There's something that the one confusing I'm thinking about. Yeah, no, you're correct on that. It's not that. It's not that. There's something confusing about Grand Canyon. All I ever knew was that, like, Dan Marley was coaching them for a while. But
it's Bryce Drew now.
Right. Yeah, no. But listening to the Seth Davis's whatever, you know, they were all putting Grand Canyon as a team you got to worry about, and, you know, sure, why not? So we'll see about that. But yeah, I mean,
You ready? Grand Canyon University, private for profit Christian university in Phoenix, Arizona. They offer degrees in over 200 areas of study. As of September 2023, more than 100,000 students were enrolled online and in person. So,
yeah. So, okay. Well, there.
They had 67,000 undergrad.
Yeah, there was something different than then. It's not that, you know, they're not drawing from the same pool of college people. I mean, like, you, when I went to UMBC, it was viewed more of a commuter school, but that's different than saying,
right. Agreed.
You know, that's a different deal. But yeah, I don't know. I will say this, like, this is, I'm not paying much attention to college basketball. My one first round upset, I'm already calling Michigan will lose. They clearly had a good finish at the end. They win the Big Ten tournament, but now they're on the shorter week playing Sunday at the end of playing Thursday. They're going in to altitude in Denver. They're going to lose. I call that one now. Michigan's out in the first
round. They're playing UC San Diego, who is a very good defensive team and forces a lot of turnovers. And I can tell you, Michigan turns the ball over a lot. Yeah, sounds like a good one. All right, I'll talk to you later in the week. Appreciate it.
Awesome, man. See you.
Ben Standing, everybody. Want to mention that Window Nation has a great deal for March Madness. It's buy two, get two free, any style of window, with no money down, no payments, and no interest for 2 years. So you can get new windows installed in a day and not pay anything for 2 years until the year 2027. All the while, you'll be saving big on utility bills, air conditioning, heating bills. Imagine what you can do with all that extra money in your pocket. Window Nation sells some of the best windows you can buy at a fraction of the price of the expensive name brands, and often outlast and outperform them too. Plus, they're guaranteed for life. So hurry, this offer ends soon. Don't miss out on your chance to take advantage of Window Nation's March buy two, get two free offer with nothing paid until the year 2027. 27. Call them at 866-90-NATION or head to windownation.com. Mention my name. You'll get a fast, free in-home estimate. They won't pressure you. You're not obligated to anything. It's all I ask. If you've been thinking about new windows, just give Window Nation a shot to give you a free estimate. 866-90-NATION, windownation.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, we got a tournament bracket, and we've got two locals, true locals. Mount St. Mary's is in it, and that's it. I mean, no Georgetown, no Mason. Mason had a shot, no GW, no Howard. Who am I forgetting? No of the, you know, the teams that really aren't truly local, but lots of local alums like Virginia Tech and Virginia and Madison, etc. None of those teams involved. I know there are a lot of Mount St. Mary's alums in the market. Emmitsburg, Maryland, great spot, beautiful campus, but they're playing AU. I'm going to be rooting for AU. But the team that has a chance from our area is Maryland, and they're the biggest draw in this town when it comes to college basketball. Always really have been, except for the period of Coach Thompson winning national championship and taking them to national championships. And I look at this team, and I don't know, it was probably a month and a half ago, Denton, I came in here, and I think it was more likely than not after they had beaten Wisconsin at home, and they had won three in a row, and I think I said, I think this is a potential Final Four team. Like, this team is legit good, and I know I get very excited about Maryland year in and year out when I think they've got a decent team, but this team's different. This is the best team they've had since 2020. I think that 2020 team with, you know, a senior point guard who was, by the way, super clutch in Anthony Cowan, the defensive player of the year in Daryl Morsell, Wiggins coming off the bench. Obviously, you know, Jalen Stick-Smith as a big who was blowing up in a major way. That was a very good team that had Dante Scott on it, that had Eric Ayala on it. They had a chance to make a deep run. They were going to be either a two or a three seed going into that Big Ten tournament. They would have, you know, landed as either a two or a three in the NCAA tournament. But this starting five is great. It's versatile. Saturday was concerning in that they really got physically beat up a bit on the glass by the two big guys, Golden and Wolf, for Michigan. Wolf, by the way, is going to be, where's he projected? Is he lottery projected? He's got to be first round. I think he is. Are you looking that up?
Yeah, I'm looking it up. I mean, what are we considering a valuable mock draft?
I don't know. Danny Wolf is a first. He's a first round talent. There's
no
doubt.
So. I think after the Zach Edey went first round, I would say that Danny Wolf is first round. I feel like he has. Edey was a better college player, but I feel like from an NBA intangible standpoint, there might be some things that he checks that.
I'm looking at the NBA.com just did a mock draft a few days ago. Derek Queen goes 6th overall to Brooklyn, and let me just see where Danny Wolf is. He's got to be in the first round, doesn't he? Certainly looks like a first rounder to me.
And I think you're really skipping over the fun of that NBA mock draft. Washington Wizards, Cooper Flagg.
Well, yeah, because they've got the worst record, so they're projected.
Danny Wolf goes
at the end of the first round of the Clippers at 29 overall.
Is that Creighton kid go first round? I love the Creighton. Yeah, Creighton. No, Creighton guy goes 46. I think he's awesome.
Great defense.
Kalkbrenner.
Yep. So, a couple of things. One, I don't, we'll have Kevin Willard on tomorrow. I don't love that they got to go out to Seattle. The last time they were there, by the way, was the first of the year. It was January 2nd, actually. And they lost to really the worst team in the Big Ten, Washington. It was not a good start to their conference season. I don't think they play in that arena that Washington plays in. It's a long trip, but they don't have to play until Friday, so they should be fine. They've got plenty of rest. They lost on Saturday. I don't know a lot about Grand Canyon other than what I've been reading. They are an experienced team, apparently not as good as the team that they had last year, but a pretty decent team and a threat. They like to get up and down. They like to score. Maryland loves to run and loves to get a bunch of shots up. And I personally think the team that gives Maryland a difficult time, and we've seen it with Michigan State and Michigan, are the teams that can really guard and really extend out defensively against Maryland's guards, which was much more so Michigan State than Michigan. Michigan's bigs were tough matchups. Now, Queen in particular was a tough matchup for Michigan, but I don't think you get that in Grand Canyon, and I don't know that you get that in Memphis, who's banged up. Colorado State's a tough team. I'd be disappointed, Denton, if this team doesn't make it to the second weekend. And I'd love to see, I don't love the matchup against Florida, but I'll take on anybody, no foul trouble, Maryland playing at their best with their five starters, even with their limited bench. I don't think there's a team in the draw that they can't beat. But I'd like to at least get to next weekend in San Francisco with a chance to play Florida. Although it would be better if Florida weren't there. Be better if there was an upset and they didn't have to play Florida in the Sweet 16. And by the way, the team that they could end up playing if there's an upset is somebody like UConn in the Sweet 16. But I like Maryland's chances to certainly win two games. Winning more than two, I'd put it at kind of like, plus 140, 150. It's not a long shot by any stretch of the imagination, but they're not favored to win more than two, and it's not even money. But I give them a chance because I've watched this team every game this year, and when they have it going offensively, they are very, very difficult to guard, and they are an excellent defensive team as well. I like their chances to certainly win two and get to their first Sweet 16 in 10 years. 9 years, I guess. What do you think?
I mean, I think these first 2 days, the bracket, I think, are always kind of the funniest. Once we get the bracket, because people are always like diving in looking for upsets. I've seen a lot of people on socials and just on television. Oh, Grand Canyon's a bad matchup for Maryland. I don't know nothing about no Grand Canyon. I don't know nothing.
Remember, had a first round upset last year. They beat St. Mary's, right?
Yes, they did. And that was great for them. But, ain't nobody watching Grand Canyon. You're looking at some numbers and you're thinking, oh, well, this is clearly exactly what this team is portrayed and not factoring in who they're playing, whatever, right? So I really do like the way that Maryland, their draw lays as far as getting to the Sweet 16, getting to the second weekend. I mean, Florida is a tough one. They're so good. They just have so many different ways that they can score. Their guard in Clayton is fantastic. But I think if Maryland doesn't get into foul trouble, their five are some of the best in the country as long as they're playing well. I mean, you slide your feet on defense in the final 5 seconds, please. Don't just let a guy go from baseline to baseline. Take that out of there.
Slide your feet on defense.
Please, someone just get in front of him.
That's a little bit tougher said than done. They certainly should have contested that shot at the rim a little bit better.
They should have.
Or at least doubled and gotten the ball out of the one guy's hands that could go baseline to baseline.
But they have the talent.
Ty Sedney,
necessary.
You ever heard of him? That's what it looked like the other day. But go ahead.
They have the talent necessary in the shooting. You have to be able to shoot on a consistent basis to be able to get to, in today's day and age, the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. You know this, I know this, anyone that's a fan of college basketball knows this. Guard play is really what takes you to the next level in the NCAA tournament. Big guys are great, But guard play is what separates the teams that are good from the teams that are great. And thankfully, Maryland has a really good guard play.
It's interesting, right, though? Last year, you had two dominant big men in the final with Purdue and UConn, but they also had great guards. Look, Gary has said this for years, Gary Williams, who he won one of these things. He's like, great defense, you can win three or four games and get to a Final Four, but you have to be able to score. And when he says score, you got to be at 80-plus. You got to have the ability to score 80-plus in games. It may not turn out that way, but you've got to have that capability to win six. Maryland has that capability. There are several teams in college basketball this year. I haven't seen any of the statistics for the season, Denton, but I would bet you that scoring is way up in college basketball this year. How many games have we seen in the hundreds this year? It seems like more than usual. Has that struck you this year that we've seen more games 105 to 102 or 102 to 99? A lot of them in the SEC and Big 12, I'll give you that, but it seems like a lot of teams can score this year.
Because all these damn SEC teams can score. Like, they're the ones that
are putting up 100 points. Well, Tennessee can't. Tennessee is not a high-scoring team.
No, they can't. They can't run, but Florida can. Auburn has the ability to. Alabama definitely can. Kentucky has at several points this year. So, like, when some of these top SEC teams have that sort of offensive ability, you see a lot more of these big, big, big numbers.
I'm looking at a comparison. So, this year, right now, there are – I'm just looking at a number. So, there are 40 schools that averaged – 41 schools that averaged over 80 points, or at least 80 points per game. Last year, there were exactly 40. So there's one more than last year. Let's see what it was 2 years ago. Oh, 2 years ago, only 18 schools averaged 80 points or more. So it's really been maybe the last 2 years. And before that, in 21-22, only eight schools averaged 80 or more. So there's definitely been a trend of higher scoring college basketball games, which, by the way, I think is good for the sport in the last two seasons. But, man, it really seems like this year Alabama averaged 91.1 points per game. Gonzaga was 2, Florida was 3, Kentucky was 4. So three of the highest scoring teams, five of the top 10 scoring teams in the country were out of the SEC. Alabama, Florida, Kentucky, Missouri, and Auburn. But there's definitely been a trend, a massive jump in the last 2 years in scoring in college basketball. It seemed like it. It seemed like this year was really the year, but I guess it's the last 2 years. All right, a couple of other thoughts to finish up the show after these words from a few of our sponsors. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app. So, Denton, I was going through all of the first-round games on Thursday and Friday. Some of those games have not been set yet because we've got the first four games. But typically, every year, you know, where you've got, you know, the field at 64, you've got 32 games, 16 on Thursday, 16 on Friday. There are typically teams that are lower seeded that are favored over higher seeded teams. You see it a lot with a 9 over an 8 or a 10 over a 7, sometimes an 11 over a 6, you know, even 12 over a 5 at times. And I would bet on average there are like four of those games, five of those games a year in the first round on the Thursday, Friday. There's just one game right now where a lower seeded team is favored over a higher seeded team. Right now, as of this moment, every higher seeded team is favored. And by the way, the teams that are playing unknown opponents at this point, they'll be favored as well because they're going to be playing 16 seeds or 11 or 12 seeds. They'll be favored as well. I think they will. I don't think North Carolina would be favored or Xavier or Texas would be favored. Maybe they would. I don't know. Only one game, though, where a lower-seeded team is favored, and that is the game in which the winner will play the Maryland Grand Canyon winner. Colorado State, as a 12 seed is a 2.5-point favorite over Memphis. Only game. Typically, you see four or five of those. Just one lower-seeded team favored. They're 2.5-point favorites over Memphis. Memphis is Tyrese Hunter. He averages 14.5, 15 points a game. Is questionable. I guess he got hurt over the weekend. That's a big part of why they're an underdog. But you only have one of those games. Strange. I guess we'll start picking brackets tomorrow and Wednesday.
Yeah, start the process of it. Maybe I think Wednesday should be the official day where we give our Final Four and such.
Okay. See how organized we are for March Madness? Tune in tonight, 7 o'clock, for Talking Terps with special guest Hall of Fame coach Gary Williams, previewing Maryland's tournament showdown against Grand Canyon. Catch all the latest Terps talk on the Team 980, including the game, right here on Friday, scheduled to go at 4:35 from Seattle. Chris is next, back tomorrow.